Joining us by phone this morning, Congresswoman Joanne Emerson, who represents Southeast Missouri's 8th Congressional District. Good morning, Congresswoman.
Good morning, Mark.
How are you doing?
I'm well, thanks.
Well, as we headed into spring, we were a little concerned about whether the levees would be ready, and now it looks like our worries are on the opposite end of the spectrum. We'd actually like to see some rain.
Well, we definitely need it. It's so dry, and I was driving yesterday, and with the high winds that we had at about 30 miles an hour, the dust was blowing all over the place, and I was talking to Darren, who is my sort of regional coordinator, if you will. Mm-hmm. I said the EPA trying to control dust on farms would not, I don't know what they were thinking when they actually tried to promulgate a rule so that we could control this dust, but nonetheless, it has been awfully dry, and we desperately need some nice steady rain, not pop-up showers,
right,
but just good steady rain.
Yeah, there was certainly no control in the dust yesterday with the wind the way it was.
No, I know, and some of our farmers, you know, it's just been too dry even to get their soybeans planted, so. Mm-hmm. Anyway, we've got corn coming up really well in places. Other places it's dried up. You know, it just depends on whether they irrigate or not, and I'm keeping my fingers crossed that at some point here we're going to get a couple of days of just light rain.
You know, the Senate may be taking up a version of the Farm Bill within the next couple of weeks, and the complaint from some of our Arkansas delegation is that this bill doesn't address some of the particular concerns of Southern agriculture.
No, it really doesn't. The Senate Farm Bill takes care of every commodity, including cotton, because it gets its own separate revenue insurance plan, but our rice guys and the peanut growers are very concerned because they are left out. Obviously, rice you can't buy crop insurance for, given that we're growing it in water. However, I know that the chairwoman of the Agriculture Committee, Debbie Stabenow, and Pat Roberts, who's the ranking member, have said that they're open some kind of compromise that's going to help improve the safety net for those commodities, and we've got to do that. I'm not quite sure what it's going to look like, but they filed the bill. They're going to bring it to the floor, and I anticipate that some of our southern senators will go ahead and offer amendments to, I don't know if they're going to do a target price scenario for rice. I'm not quite sure yet, but I suspect that we're going to see some type of program put in place. Question is, you know, if we do that, can we still meet the $23 billion savings that they have to achieve over 10 years?
Yeah, you mentioned peanuts. That's become a much bigger crop here in Northeast Arkansas over the past year or two.
Well, we don't have any peanut allotments, or we might have at one time, and perhaps there's one or two, but I don't think that we grow them here in our district, or I've never seen it here. We used to at one time, and not so much, but has it increased a lot down there?
Well, quite a bit. I mean, there's been several, you know, articles, you know, news articles we've seen about there's been quite an increase in people going to peanuts in parts of our district here.
Interesting.
Yeah.
You know, we've gone to potatoes a lot, not peanuts, so. I don't know. I'm hopeful. I know in the House that they're going to start marking up a farm bill. They're still doing hearings around the country. And, you know, they had one down in Jonesboro, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Sure did.
What, a few weeks ago? Yeah.
A month ago.
And so they're going to start writing a bill this summer. And, you know, I would say, quite frankly, there's probably at best a 50-50 shot that we get a farm bill done this year. I would like to get it done. Obviously, we always want our producers to have some certainty and know what they're facing for next year. It makes it really difficult when we do a farm bill at the beginning of the year because it drags out, and then you've already made your planning decisions, and then what's going to happen based on how they change things around. It's difficult, and this is the time that we need to get it done. We'll see.
I know we're all concerned about the economy, and you're particularly concerned about some tax provisions that are due to expire next year and the impact that could have on our economy.
Well, you know, there are over 200 expiring tax provisions at the end of the year. Everything, I mean, if you look on the personal side of you know, we've got capital gains, we've got dividends, we've got tax rates that are due to go up, individual income tax rates. We've got to deal with a child tax credit. We've got there's a marriage penalty, the estate tax. On the other side, on corporate side, you know, there are a million tax, expiring tax provisions with regard to the oil depletion allowance, gas and drilling tax credits, biodiesel tax credits. I mean, I could go on and on and on, and we really have to deal with these. And both the Senate and the House are trying to work behind the scenes to do a major tax overhaul, which, of course, I think most people think we need to flatten and make much more fair the tax code. Certainly on the corporate side, it's not fair that, one of the biggest companies in the world, General Electric, pays no corporate income taxes whatsoever. And then you've got Missouri companies, you've got Arkansas companies who are paying, you know, effective tax rates of 40%. And so we don't have a level playing field. And I think that it really is a drag on our opportunity to be competitive with the rest of the world. And quite frankly, I think a lot of companies say if you would reduce the corporate tax rate, which, of course, the United States is the highest in the world, and go to a territorial tax system so that it doesn't penalize us to bring any kind of profits that we might make overseas back into the United States to reinvest for job creation here. If you can change that, give us a flat 25% corporate tax rate, which is about the average of the rest of the world. You know, we can live with that. We don't need tax deductions or tax credits to offset a higher tax rate. So, the corporate side actually seems a bit more simple until you look at the tax code and see that, you know, there are so many little tax credits and or deductions, millions of them, it seems. I would say thousands is probably more realistic. That might be good for one or two or three companies. And if, in fact, we want to be fair and do it the right way, then people are going to have to be willing to give up those deductions peculiar to their individual industry and take the lower corporate tax rate. I think in the end it's more healthy. I also think it helps our economy by closing loopholes and we get more revenue out of it, even though we're lowering rates.
You know, the criticism that you hear sometimes about the corporations is that they've had tax breaks, they've lived under these loopholes for a long time. They've had these tax breaks, and yet they have not created jobs. They've not expanded U.S. operations. Why would they do this if we give them even more tax breaks?
Well, of course, you know, there's so much uncertainty out there in the marketplace right now, Mark, and things are changing. I mean, we've become more productive. We use more technology. And we've become more efficient. So, excuse me, the fact of the matter is that you can do more in production these days in manufacturing with fewer people. That's the sad state. On the one hand, it's amazing the innovation that we've been able to invent and create. On the other hand, it makes you don't need as many people to perform the same tasks. But we also have great opportunities on the technology front to continue being creative and innovating here in the United States, but it's awfully expensive to do that. And then if you have to lay upon that, you know, incredible regulatory overburden, especially from this administration, and I don't mean to be overly political here, but seriously, when the Environmental Protection Agency, you know, tries to control dust, says that we have to have these new standards for power plants, that technology of which isn't going to be commercially available for 20 years, so that if you make a repair on your plant, for example, you have to incorporate the new technology, which, of course, you can't get for 20 years. So therefore, the plant shuts down. And so that's, I mean, it's a lack of understanding on the part of the regulators and a desire on the part of this administration to pass regulations because they can't get bills passed through Congress that would enable them to do these other things. So they just do it either through executive order or through the regulatory process. But it's a huge burden to business, and I dare say we have the tightest, strictest, and most difficult regulatory process to try to wade through if you're a business, and it's much easier to perhaps go elsewhere than have to deal with some of these departments and agencies in our government.
Well, I know a lot of people have been concerned about whether their post office is going to close. The U.S. Postal Service has decided not to close some of these small-town post offices for now. There's a postal reform bill that that passed the Senate, but it's, as I understand, facing some stiff opposition in the House.
Well, let's put it this way. The Senate bill is not great, but it's a whole heck of a lot better than the draft bill that we have in the House. I don't like the draft bill we have in the House. And neither bill, in my opinion, really attacks what I think is a huge part of the culture problem at the Postal Service, and that is that they are so top-heavy with management, and there are so many layers of bureaucracy at the top that it makes it really difficult to be efficient and productive, you know, at the customer service level where we are. And so the easiest low-hanging fruit would be, oh, we're just going to close these rural post offices. You know, it might cost $100,000 a year for them to run a you know, netting out by the time you've gotten revenues. And they might lose $100,000 on these rural post offices that serve an entire community and, you know, which attract people to town, and then they go and spend their money at other businesses. But I can't tell you how many managers in the Postal Service make over $100,000. So you eliminate one manager or you close one post office. I mean, to me, you know, it's not brain science here. But nonetheless, the House has got a bill. I'm not 100% sure the House bill can get passed. Basically, it closes rural post offices. It goes to from 6-day to 5-day mail delivery. And it does a lot of other things that I don't like. As I said, the Senate bill is better. It's not perfect either. And until the Postal Service, which really is not funded by taxpayer dollars, I think most people are mistaken to think that it is.
Right.
Only for mail overseas for soldiers and for the handicapped. But they need to become, you know, more efficient like Walmart. And regardless of whether you like or don't like Walmart, they do have an efficient system. And they do know how to get product to market, and they do it at the lowest cost possible. The Postal Service could easily adopt some of those strategies, but I don't see them making an effort to do that.
So there is, as you're looking at it, more to it than just people not using the mail as much as they used to.
Well, that's correct. I mean, obviously we know people aren't using the mail as much as they used to, at least as far as writing letters go. I mean, people still mail packages.
Sure.
And that sort of thing. And people still do, a lot of people still pay their bills through the mail, like my husband. Now, I pay my bills online. My husband still writes a check every month, you know, for the bills that he handles. And there is that. But so that revenue is lost. But the Postal Service ought to be able to compete a little bit better, too, against FedEx and UPS. And the way that the system is set up and the law is written, they don't quite have that kind of flexibility. But since it's a, you know, it's mostly a private organization, they should have the same tools at their fingertips as those companies do.
Well, I know we got troops returning from overseas, and more will be returning over the next year or so. There's going to be an increasing need for services for them to help in the transition back into civilian life.
Well, that's very true, and you know, we just laid to rest yesterday a private first class in Rolla, Missouri, who was whose wife is expecting a baby any day, and it's heartbreaking. Mm. It's like a gut punch, and so it's absolutely critical that we be able to provide all of the services necessary for our returning soldiers. We had just in the House passed our appropriations bill for veterans, and you know, we do not. There are no cuts in it. We actually try to expand job opportunities and job training programs. Provide some incentives for businesses, obviously, to hire veterans. Try to beef up the healthcare system even more, because I still don't think that it addresses a lot of the concerns and challenges that a lot of our soldiers face when they come home, and so we have to continue to focus on that. I don't think the Veterans Administration is very well run, and it could be much more user-friendly. So we are trying. Unfortunately, you can only do so much from the legislative side of things in getting the executive branch to do make the major changes that they need so that there's no soldier who is left behind in the system.
Well, just less than a minute left. We're heading in, of course, to the Memorial Day weekend. As we talk about the veterans, it's time to get together with our families, relax and have fun, but also to pause and remember our veterans and especially those who've paid the ultimate price for our freedoms.
Well, I know. And, you know, Memorial Day really is a somber time. You know, we celebrate our independence on the 4th of July, mm-hmm. and that's generally, lots of fireworks and the like, but Memorial Day is a somber event, and it's time to pay tribute. It's time for neighbor to help neighbor. And, you know, we've got a lot of soldiers who are deployed overseas, and anything that we can do as part of a community to reach out to the families of those soldiers who are deployed to help them to make their lives a little bit easier, I think it's time to really reflect on that and take advantage of this day to renew our own commitments.
All right. Well, thank you. We're out of time. I appreciate your time today.
Thanks, Mark.
All right. Congresswoman Joanne Emerson joins us from her office in Washington. You're listening to Morning Edition.